Good.
It's a good afternoon and a warm welcome to this afternoon session, Overview of Business Intelligence in Microsoft Office and SharePoint 2013. Two presenters this afternoon. Peter Myers is me. I'm a BI expert. I'm based in Australia. Been working with Microsoft Business Intelligence for over 12 years now. And it's my passion to work with the technology, but also to share and evangelize what I learn and what I appreciate about the Microsoft BI stack. Presenting with me is also Ari Skor.
Thanks, Peter. And I've had the pleasant experience of working with Peter and learning a little bit about business intelligence. I just recently started on the product marketing management side for Microsoft, working specifically on Excel and Access, two of your favorite products, I'm sure, if you like data. And specifically also looking at driving the disclosure of some of our new previews coming out in Excel 2013, which are Geoflow and Data Explorer. Really focused on marketing core content, demos like you'll see today, and of course based in Redmond, a little ways away from Peter out in Australia.
Right. So both of our slides here include contact information, but we really encourage you here at this session today and at the event this week, if you need to connect, you've got any questions, reach out to us. There may well possibly be the opportunity to ask questions during this session, but I will share with you that I've presented this topic maybe over 5 years. And for a 75-minute session at an event like this, it used to be a comfortable fit. But as Microsoft keep putting more and more and more into their products, it makes it really challenging to give you an overview across the entire session. So as you will discover with this session, it is intensely demonstration-driven, which is my preferred way of relaying what you can do rather than bullet points. Okay, but as a result of that, I think we have 8 or 9 demonstrations, and it will pretty much squeeze right into the 75-minute break. So if there are any questions, we encourage you to come up, chat to us afterwards, or connect with us in the exhibition hall. So, session objectives, to define and introduce what self-service BI is. What is this concept, and how can we deliver it? How can we provide appropriate tools to people to deliver self-service BI? Ari will talk to you about Microsoft's BI strategy and vision, and then pretty much this session is going to give you end-to-end what you can achieve from a BI perspective with Office, mainly with Excel, also with Visio, and with SharePoint 2013. Session outline then maps that path. Introduction to self-service BI. We'll walk through what you can do on the desktop with both Excel and Visio. And then we'll take a look from the server-side story with SharePoint, from sharing, collaboration, and the business intelligence add-ins available through SharePoint with Excel services, PowerPivot, Visio services, and Performance Point services.
So we're going to run through this introduction fairly quickly because, as Peter said, we have a ton of demos, and that's really what showcases business intelligence with Microsoft. So looking at self-service BI, it's really all about empowering the analysts who can design, customize, maintain their BI solutions. Make note, though, that this is not a complete solution or something that really replaces corporate BI. It's really something that we see moving more into Office 2013 and specifically with Excel 2013, increasing with sharing capabilities with SharePoint 2013, and of course maintaining the back-end data platform with SQL Server.
Yeah, so I'd really like to stress there's this mutual benefit. Corporate IT, I'm guessing most of you are IT professionals here, and that you're going to produce corporate solutions, ETL, data warehouse, data modeling, and delivery. This mutual benefit that's derived by delegating back to the business that knows what they need, knows their data best, and empowering them with tools and education is pretty much what we're here to talk about with self-service BI today.
Right. It's definitely, you know, bringing business insights to all employees. So Excel 2013 is really, well, Excel All Up is really what all end users use, business analysts. So we are really moving a lot of capabilities into that endpoint so that they can access their data without having to go to IT and put a burden on them. But really, when we think about kind of the balance that we're doing with Microsoft BI, and you'll see more and more of this as we move forward in the next few months, it's really taking the empowerment, putting it with the end user, allowing them that self-service tool with Excel so they can have agility, while then balancing it with some of the control and enterprise governance that you can expect from SharePoint. So really getting both those pieces, and today we're really focusing on the end user side, and that's what you'll see with the demos. So Office 2013, really what we're looking at here is Excel 2013 as being kind of the main tool. Visio 2013 kind of plays a supplementary role, and you'll see that throughout the demos as well. So looking at Excel, something that everyone uses, as we said, business analysts especially, being able to analyze, communicate, and manage information all within a desktop client. And so that includes a number of different capabilities that we're bringing into the client. So that includes some add-ins, like Power Pivot in 2010. So we added that one. And then another few that are coming with 2013, like Data Explorer Preview, Geoflow Preview, data mining add-ins as well. These are all things that you'll see a little bit of today, but really continuing to add these capabilities to make and empower those end users to be able to analyze data.
Right. So it's interesting to note that Office is estimated to be the most installed set of applications in the world today.
1 billion, right?
1 billion?
I think that's what I hear.
And of that 1 billion, what I'm hearing is that 600? Excel is about 600 million people. So 600 million people have Excel installed on the desktop. So it makes an awful lot of sense that if you're going to empower people to gain access and discover insight from data, then you're going to deliver it through this familiar common tool.
Yep. And I think of that 600 million, about 500 actually launch Excel each month the last time I looked. So it's a tool that everyone not only has installed, but actually uses on a regular basis. So when we think about some of the capabilities that we now have in Excel, they kind of map very well to a process that a business analyst would go through. So first looking at accessing, cleaning, mashing up data. So we have a new add-in that's in preview right now called Data Explorer, which allows you to access both private and public data sources online. So that's just being able to do some online search as well as connecting to different data sources, querying them, and bringing it into Excel to be able to then mash them up within Excel with Power Pivot. We also have a new extensibility model that's across Office applications, and that's called Apps for Office. So that adds a whole nother level of extensibility and mashing up data that you weren't able to do before. Also note here is the data model, which is present within all Excel 2013 workbooks. So although Power Pivot may be only for some of our premium SKUs of Office, the data model is present throughout so that you can create relationships and be able to visualize rich data within Excel. Also looking at kind of the visualization capabilities, there's kind of a spectrum. So we think about having kind of the lower end capabilities that anyone, even someone who doesn't have data analysis background, is able to quickly get to visualizations and insights. So quick analysis is something, I don't know if any of you have seen that capability, but being able to select data, be able to visualize it quickly with conditional formatting, charts, pivot tables. Quick explore, being able to actually drill in and out of different pivot tables, that's really nice. Power View is really our all-up premium visualization within Excel 2013. So being able to create interactive dashboards with different types of visualization, whether that's charts, maps, scatter plots, all of those different things. And then Geoflow kind of adds a new level to that, being able to look at specifically geospatial and temporal data. And I'll show you a little bit of that later on in the demo. And then kind of looking at the share element, it's all about SharePoint and being able to put workbooks on SharePoint, be able to interact with them within a browser experience, and then have others be able to gain insights just like you would in Excel 2013. So I'll turn it over to Peter to jump right into our first feature, which is Power Pivot.
Right, and my favorite feature. I mean, as a BI practitioner, I see that essential to a BI deployment, the jewel in the crown, so to speak, is a data model that provides a representation of the data that is intuitive, highly performant even over extremely large volumes of data, and can encapsulate business rules in the terms of calculations. This single version of the truth is best implemented through a data model like a cube or the new tabular model. That capability to produce a data model is also available to the Excel user via the Power Pivot add-in, which notably is now automatically available in Excel 2013 with the Professional Plus edition. It's just a matter of having this add-in enabled and then building up a model that can integrate data from a variety of different data sources, data formats, can be enriched with hierarchies, calculations, and then this can become a data source upon which internal workbook reports can be built. And that's what we'll explore here in this demonstration. Don't have a lot of time. So it's like those cooking shows where here's what the cake looks like, and I'm just going to embellish it by putting a nice layering of frosting or icing on top. This is a really good example of where I see Power Pivot becoming a fit, is that the corporate data warehouse that I have permission to read from has sales information that allows me to analyze by time, by product, by geographic region, what we've sold. Yet my manager comes to me and says, yes, but what we want to do is understand profitability. And I go back to the data warehouse and, shock horror, there's no cost information that I can relate in a meaningful way to produce profitability calculations. So Power Pivot comes to the rescue in allowing me to extract certain data like sales information that I've built up here, and then introducing from another data source, in this case from an Excel workbook, I have the cost information broken down by stock keeping unit. So I define a connection to this workbook for all the products and their related costs. I configure that there is a first row that has the headers. I can preview this data. And we see here the stock keeping unit, the unique identifier for the product. There's also the product name and the cost to produce each product. I'm not going to include the product column itself. I already have that from the data warehouse. And if there is any optimization that a Power Pivot modeler should be aware of, do not introduce data that is irrelevant to your model. It consumes resources in the form of memory that could be otherwise used elsewhere. So I bring in just two columns. Click finish. It introduces an entire new table to the model consisting of a stock keeping unit and the product cost. And simply by dragging and dropping, I've then created an integration between the corporate data and this Excel workbook data. The next step then would be to enrich the data model, and specifically my sales table here that already has calculations for sales. To define new calculations, I come across to the table here in grid view, and I add a new calculated column. Now, the expression language here is DAX, Data Analysis Expressions, built largely on Excel functions and extended with capabilities beyond what Excel was ever designed to work with. For example, relationships across tables. By using the related function here and then specifying my table name and column name, it will navigate the relationships and then introduce the product cost associated with the product ID for each row. Now, if I modify that expression and multiply by the quantity, then effectively I've come up with a column here that is my COGS, my cost of goods sold. I'll specify that the format here is currency. And then in order to support the analysis, so when it comes to business analytic queries, there's three prime things that need to happen. You need to filter data by a date range, by a product. You need to group by, and then you need to aggregate within those groups. And this is what this second type of calculation does. By adding a calculated field here, it uses the sum function to sum the values in the COGS column. And I'm going to rename this simply as cost. Then I'll introduce a second calculation. So profit is simply the sales calculation subtract cost. Whoops, something went wrong. Profit, colon, equals my DAX expression that is sales. Something's going wrong here.
I think it's just the cell.
You know, I've never seen it do that before.
Jumped over.
Let's do a right-click delete and start again. Profit, colon, equals sales subtract cost. And now I've extended the data model with an additional calculation, and I also specify that this will be formatted as a currency. Now, to monitor the profitability is another requirement. And so what I can build into this data model then is an additional calculation that is the profitability. This is really what my manager is wanting me to analyze. Profitability then is profit. And that might seem a bit odd. Why does profitability equal the result of another calculation? But let me explain why. Once I format it, I'm going to right-click this calculation, and I'm going to define a key performance indicator. So essentially, the profit value can be compared against the sales. We then come up with a ratio of profit over the sales achieved. And the rules that we have at this company is that if you achieve less than 5% profitability, you're well off track. If you achieve 15% or above, you're meeting expectation. Anywhere between 5 and 15%, off track, but not critically off track. I then specify the icon style that should be used to represent the status for this KPI. And now a key performance indicator is included in this model's definition. I then choose to hide the cogs column. I don't want users to even know it exists. Their interface will be through the cost calculation and the variations with profit. So now switching back to the diagram view, you can see how I've enriched the data model with cost, profit, profitability, and then finally I choose to hide the product cost table. Again, its purpose has been served. It's introduced cost, which via a relationship is made available through a calculation in the sales table. So, let's take a look at what this looks like in a report. So by using a pivot table, I add a pivot table into the workbook itself, and its data source is the Power Pivot data model. Let's just introduce sales. I would like to filter by a particular year, so I drag the year field, and I'll filter by 2010. And there we can see the sales. And then we'll break it down by product. So I have a products hierarchy that allows me to drill down from category down to the individual product. To provide an interactive filtering experience, we have slices. So in my state table, I will right-click the region level, and I'll add this as a slicer. So now users can interact with and select the different regions. Or select all of them by clearing the filter. To answer my manager's question then, but what's the profitability of the products? We now have available to us in this model a KPI. What's the value and what's the status of that profit? And so now he or she can discover that gliders are not meeting expectation. What's the problem here? Clearly, one of our products is being sold at a lower rate than it should otherwise be. That's Power Pivot. That's really tip of the iceberg. This is an amazing technology delivered through Excel and empowering individuals now to go ahead and create their own solutions. This is a perfect self-service BI story. All right, there's more to come on Power Pivot, but we'll move on with the Excel client for now. That was the first demonstration on completing a Power Pivot workbook. Next topic, Data Explorer, a new add-in to be made available to Excel 2013, providing the ability for you to discover, combine, and refine data. So what you may well discover is the data that you need to load into Power Pivot might need some preparation work done to it first. Okay, so you might actually bring it into Excel, and the old approach to doing this was using native Excel functionality to go ahead and VLOOKUP, replace missing values, conditional logic, and so on. This new add-in provides an extremely powerful tool to source a variety of different data sources, different data formats, and to transform it in simple or sophisticated ways, and then land that data in the workbook or, as I'll demonstrate, land it directly into your Power Pivot data model. So this demonstration looks at sourcing and transforming external data and extending my Power Pivot data model. Have you ever noticed that when you help someone out, like your manager, and they say, well, we need to know about profitability, and you do it, there's always going to be some other task. So having met that requirement, my manager then says, well, okay, but what about per capita sales? Now, I have the same problem because when I go back to the data warehouse, I don't find any population information against geographies. So the only way that I can answer that question about sales per capita is to source some data of population by state. So I do my research, and out there on the internet, I discover that there's a web page made available through the US Census, and this is a real live web page coming from the US government's site. What it gives me then is a breakdown by state. In fact, it also gives me the total population. It gives me rank information as well, which isn't relevant for the task at hand. What I do then is I copy the URL, I return to my Excel workbook, and then here on the Data Explorer tab, I then introduce data from web. Copy in the URL, and this generates a new query. Default name is query one. If you double click up here, you can name it to something that's more fitting, state population. And when I select this table here, it's actually the HTML table in that web page. And this is how I could transform the data. First of all, a column named number isn't terribly self-describing. Let me rename. This becomes census population. Rank isn't relevant. Right-click, remove. The grand total here, the United States, isn't relevant either. So I can filter this entire column and just deselect the United States. Now, what I've achieved here is really a four-step transformation. Here on the right-hand side, I open up this pane. We can see we're sourcing data, modifying a type, renaming a column, removing a column, and then filtering rows. And procedurally, these are the transformations that will take place.
Now you're actually able to jump back as well. Important to note.
Yeah, actually, settings I should have turned on too. You can see for each step, there's actually a formula related to it. And you can actually come in here too and delete any of the steps. Please don't delete a step if downstream steps have dependencies on it. While it's possible, you'll break things. I've defined an entire query on how to extract data from a web page. And now when I click Done, it adds this as an Excel table to the workbook. And I have the ability, by clicking on this link here, to load this as a table into the Power Pivot data model. So by doing this, and now switching it back to the Power Pivot window, we can now see state population is part of this data model. So in order to answer my manager's question, what I need is this census population to arrive in a calculation here in the sales table that would be sales per capita. And this is how I choose to do it. In fact, I go to the state table and I add a calculated column. I have one row per state here. And what I choose to do this time is to use a lookup function. Look up the value for census population where the states match on both sides. This then becomes census population. I always like to update the data type, so this is a whole number. And for formatting purposes, use the thousand separator. And then to support the analysis of these values, I create another calculation that will sum the census population. And then I'll name this simply population. And format this appropriately. Then I can hide this column. I don't want people accessing the data in the column. They will access it via this calculation down here. Now, to finish off the requirement in my sales table, I will add one final calculation that is sales per capita, which essentially is sales divided by population. And when I format this as a currency, we can now see overall for all data, without any filtering, it's 13 cents per person in the United States. That's my demonstration of Data Explorer and enriching a Power Pivot data model. Next, now that we've got a data model, how do we make it look good? How can we visualize, how can we interact with it to answer the questions that we have? And Excel provides a good set of tools when it comes to reporting off data models. There are the old standards and still good friends to this day, the pivot table and the pivot chart, providing very quick configuration and high interactivity for filtering, sorting. There are cube functions, one of my favorite features introduced in Excel 2007. There are seven cube functions that allow you, cell by cell, to extract members and values and lay out the report of your liking. PowerView was added as a feature of Excel 2013, so we can add PowerView sheets. And new in Excel 2013 are the apps for Office, and then we'll switch to Ari and have a look at GeoFlow. So let's take a look at each of these. Before I get into PowerView, let's take a look. No, let's do PowerView now. So PowerView, you may have been familiar with this in the SharePoint 2010 via reporting services in SQL Server 2012. PowerView was available through the web browser. based on a tabular BI semantic model, be it a Power Pivot workbook or a tabular database, users could create presentation-ready, highly interactive reports, and they could publish them also as PowerPoint presentations. This capability, excluding the PowerPoint presentations, is now available on the desktop, no dependency on SharePoint, in Excel 2013. Let's see by demonstration. So now that I have a data model that has the sales per capita, my manager says, I need to see this in a report. So switching back down to the Excel workbook, I'll actually choose to hide the Geo or the Data Explorer sheet. Hide it. And then on the Insert tab, I insert PowerView. And the default behavior is, if there is a Power Pivot data model in the workbook, it's going to build off it. So on the right-hand side, we see a field list that exposes the visible resources in our data model. Start with a title, US sales per capita. Expanding the date table, I find that I have a year field, and just by selecting it, it constructs a table with year as its first column. And the distinct values found in the year column of my data model appear. Now, if it's a single column table, I can then come up here on the ribbon and convert this to a slicer. What's new in this release too is I can change the font size, increasing it, and this allows users to interact and filter the content of the PowerView sheet. Here I am filtering by 2010, I can clear, I can multi-select as well. For now, 2010. And then by clicking in a blank area, I'm going to construct a new table. And this table will have state and my sales per capita. And the default layout is a table. A new visualization to PowerView in the latest release is I can convert this to a map. The requirement is you have Excel 2013, you have internet connectivity. As you can see here, you must enable this feature, and this will allow PowerView to communicate with the Bing Maps service and provide spatial representation of the data. And so now that I can see it as a map, and I can drill in or zoom in to the level that I need for analysis, I might also need to analyze this right down to an attribute of my product, which would be the demographic. So I'll take demographic, put this on the color, and we also have pie charts. That's something else that's new in this release. When you categorize by a color, it allows you then to see via the legend here. For example, in Delaware, we're getting 78 cents per person in that state. For professional, 4 cents for intermediate, and so on. And there's my example of PowerView based on the enriched data model. Other visualizations. So there's two that I'll cover here. The cube functions I talked about, and the new feature in Office 2013. And specifically here available in Excel 2013 is that you can extend it with apps that are made available through an app store or an on-premise app store. And these apps are built by using HTML5, JavaScript, web technologies. And so what you can already find is that there are some interesting and compelling visualizations that you can add to your worksheets from apps from Office. Some of them are free. In fact, the one that I'll demonstrate is free. The gauge here is free. So let's take a look at this in demo. There's two parts to this demonstration.
Well, he's getting that set up. Some of the free ones that I'll mention are the Bing Maps one. There's a geographic heat map that you can do of the United States, as well as a bubbles one. But there'll be more coming in the next year or so as we continue to build out the Apps for Office ecosystem.
Right. So in this report, we're going to have a look at bubbles. So what I'm going to do is build up a cube report. So I come in here and say, give me a cube set. So see automatically, when I type in the word cube, the IntelliSense tells me that there are 7 cube functions. They require a connection to a data model, whether it's a cube, Power Pivot data model, tabular database, and then you're able to build up formula that will bring back members, sets of members, or values from your data model. So here what I'm going to do is bring back a set, and see the IntelliSense here tells me that I've got a workbook connection to the Power Pivot data model. And then if I go to my product table, there's a demographic, bring in all. And I need a little education here. In MDX is actually the language that's being used here, multidimensional expressions. I'm saying, give me the children hierarchically of the all level. That will mean that I'll bring back a set of all of the demographics. And then finally, there is a caption. And I just put the word demographics there. So I know that in cell A1, while I see the text demographics, there's really an object that contains a set of members. And then I'm going to construct my report down here. Demographics will be the header of this column. And then I use another cube function that is the cube ranked member. Using the same connection and using the set found in A1. Does anyone know that when you press F4, you can toggle between the different states of absolute and relative references? So what I want is the absolute reference to cell A1, because I'm building up here a template formula that when I copy it, it will work for the other rows in my table. So from that set, which ranked member do I want? I'd probably want ranked member number 1, but because I'm building up a template, I use the row function. Row of A1 returns 1. Row of A592 returns 592. So the fact that I use a relative reference for A1 means that if I copy this down, there's the other members in the set. We see here in cell A9 that I get an error because we've exceeded the boundaries of the set. So I just delete it. And then I create another header up here. This will be sales. And this time I use the cube value function using the same workbook connection. And then I specify that I'm filtering by here, the member in A4. And then I want from the model the measure that is sales. And so we can see that the sales achieved for advanced demographics was 6.25 million. Now, I also want to filter by a time period. So I switch back to my pivot table, and here I already have a filter that the user can use to interact and filter by a particular year. Now, if I create a named range, the word year actually represents as an alias the cell C1, and then I switch back and I edit my cube value, I can then pass in year. So we can actually see for 2010, the sales achieved for demographic is now 3.5 million. And when I copy this down, my template formula helps me. There are the respective sales for each of my demographics. So there's an example of using cube functions. I could select this range, insert, and we could then look at a two-dimensional graph. Just make this wide enough. And that's what our sales look like. But how could Apps for Office help you? Instead of using the chart, that's old school visualization. Let's see what Apps for Office can do for us. Here on the Insert tab, Apps for Office, I've already registered 3 of the free ones. There's the Gauge, there's the Bing Maps, Bubbles. I'm not sure if this has got high business value, but it looks good and it makes for a good demonstration. So I'll insert Bubbles, and here is the app. And you can have multiple apps side by side, if that made sense. This is what Bubbles looks like. This opens up a whole world of potential for web developers that have the skills of HTML5, REST API, programming and so on, is that they can start to extend Excel by publishing these types of applications. Now, this application wants an Excel table. So I take this range and I just create an Excel table for it. And then when I say select table, we now see through relative size the different sales achieved by demographic.
Use a little gravity too.
Yes. So if you look down here, you've got a legend for different key things. So gravity could become stronger by hitting the down arrow. Or you could lighten gravity up by using the up arrow. And these things sort of bounce around and you can interact with them. There are certain configurations you can do to make them more appealing. I'll leave that for you to explore another time.
Or just kill time.
Yes. That's the apps for Office. Next visualization is Geoflow, and I'll hand it over to the expert in this area, and that's Ari.
Thank you, Peter. So you've seen some of the rich capabilities that we've already brought into Excel 2013, but what I want to share with you is one that's near and dear to my heart, which we have just released into a public preview a few months ago, and is nearing to become something that's native to Excel, where you can map both geospatial and temporal data on a 3D Bing map. So it's really one of those things, and how many of you saw it in the keynote, just to get an idea? Okay, so most of you attended the keynote, it looks like. But what I want to share with you is kind of how the process of authoring a Geoflow tour comes about. So really it's all about first mapping the data, so having some kind of geospatial element, whether that's latitude, longitude, zip code, country, address, any of those things we can send off to Bing, and they'll geocode that data so that we can put it on the Bing map. From there, it's all about discovering insights, so being able to take that data, visualize different columns on top of it. So what you're able to do is then also visualize it over time. So if you have timestamp data, you're able to use the play axis to watch it develop over time. So that could be looking at sales over time. That's something that we've commonly seen. But really, the end goal is to be able to see insights in the data on the Bing map, capture them as screenshot scenes, and then weave them together into an interactive tour. So kind of what you would think of as a non-traditional report, something that you can distribute within an organization and be able to have those who get it be able to interact with it, view it, and see the insights that the person who authored the tour wanted them to see. So what I'll show you here is a little bit how to create these Geoflow tours from some data within Excel.
Which one are you? That's me.
There we go. Oh, no.
Three.
Four.
Is this one? Five.
Let's see, I think. Four, five. We'll get to it sometime.
That's me.
Connected.
Okay, we have a slight problem with the audio. I don't know if we can get some quick assistance.
Looks like it's not connected.
Do we have an audio technician in the room? Did we have a testing before we started?
Yeah.
I thought it was number three. And number three is just repeating what we see up here.
Well, want to move on? We'll see if I can figure it out.
We can.
Yeah. Since you've all already seen Geoflow.
Okay, well, that's a shame. Let's see if we can fix it and come back to it.
Yeah.
And we are back on here. Okay, so that was Geoflow.
I'll show it to you all afterwards if we need to.
Okay, clicker. So... now, something really bizarre is going on here. Five, four, that's it. Okay, so that was Geoflow. And so that's really the end of the Excel story. So from Excel, we've seen data modeling, data importing, visualization across that. Your imagination, for the moment, will tell you that there's fantastic three-dimensional capabilities geospatially by using Geoflow. So now we switch across to Visio. I'm actually interested to know in this room, who uses Visio on a reasonable basis? So a good number of you, probably about a quarter of the audience. We're not really here to talk about Visio diagramming as such. The BI capability that I see in Visio is bringing these diagrams to life by associating data and then representing data through the shapes in a diagram. And that's pretty much what I'll be able to demonstrate for you here in this example.
I actually figured it out.
You figured it out?
Yeah.
What was it?
Weird little audio.
So you're number three?
Yeah, let's jump to it.
Backtrack. Pause on that topic.
Yeah. You're all excited for Visio, I'm sure.
Here's GeoFlow.
Okay. So now that we've built up your anticipation, I'll show you a little bit about GeoFlow. What we have here is some data that was actually gathered from the Dallas area by one of our sales professionals. And what he wanted to do was not only create a PowerView report like you saw Peter create, and I'll show you that here. So he wanted to create a PowerView report about electricity consumption in this particular area by different sizes of houses, whether they had a pool, a number of different variables. So as you saw, PowerView is a really great way to view data within PowerPivot. And what we have here, you can see it's all interactive. Some of the geospatial elements that Peter showed were great in terms of filtering different elements within a dashboard, but they really didn't showcase all of the explorational elements for that geospatial data. And that's what I'll show you here. So what I'm going to show you is actually how to create a GeoFlow report. So we'll jump in here, and you see that there are two GeoFlow tours that we've already created. We'll hit New Tour to create a new one. And it'll give us a blank canvas. It's just a globe, all interactive, all touch-enabled. And what we'll do...
He's touching his screen, by the way.
I'm touching my screen. I think you saw that, a little touches. So what you can do is then select the geospatial elements that we want to map the data. So this is latitude, longitude in this case, which is always the best in terms of getting a rich GeoFlow visualization. So we'll jump right to the Dallas area because that's where we know it is. Can exit out of that. We'll zoom right in. We're going to take a look, panning it down, because what we're going to do is we're going to add some data on top of this. And we're going to look specifically at square footage of the different houses in this neighborhood. So we add that, and it immediately reacts to us checking in the field well square footage. Then we want to look at different categories of houses in this neighborhood. So we can just hit decade built. It also immediately reacts to that. And so we have a legend here that tells us what the different colors mean for the different houses and the decades they were built. We're going to take a look at this particular part of the neighborhood because really what we're trying to do is understand the relationships between the decade that the houses were built and the energy consumption for them. That's what the utilities companies are really interested in. So what we're going to do is actually add two layers of visualization. So we have columns right now, and what we're going to do is add a heat map underneath. So what we need to do is change the thickness a little bit to be able to view the heat map. Then we're going to pan a little bit over so that we can see the heat map, add a new layer, and then be able to choose kilowatt hours, which is the energy. Or sorry, first you have to geocode it again. So we'll add latitude, longitude. Kind of overpowers it there. But what we'll do is then add the kilowatt hours, which show up immediately as columns, but what we want is the heat map to see it underneath. We'll add a time element to be able to see the different energy consumptions over time to get some of the seasonality analysis. And so we don't want time accumulation because that would just show the power going over time. We want to see exactly when the power consumption was the most during the time of year. So we'll say persist the last. And now what we can do is play it. And you can start seeing the seasonality analysis. That during some of the winter months, it gets a lot. And then during the summer months, of course, in Dallas, using a lot of air conditioning, it gets to be a good bit as well. But what you also start noticing is some of these insights that you would not get before. So like, for example, right here, we get a really good idea of the fact that these 1980s houses are a lot better at energy efficiency than some of the 1960s houses. So we'll just call that out right now. You can add an annotation, so we could just say more energy efficient. We can also add fields to it to call out the decade that they were built, just so we know. So we've added that annotation, and you can also add text boxes. We can also add a 2D chart if we wanted to look at this particular layer. So let's look at square footage of these different houses in the area. I guess I can add that in. So we've selected that one. We could click out of it to view others. This is actually just looking at the 1910s, but we could look at other decades of houses in that 2D chart. And that's a good find mechanism within GeoFlow. So we could find those houses by ranking them. So now that you've seen kind of how the authoring process takes place, what we could do is actually capture scenes. But I'm not going to go through that process. What I'm going to show you is what a completed tour would look like. So if we captured a bunch of different insights, much like what I was just showing you, we can go in, jump into a tour that I've already saved within this workbook. And these are automatically saved when you open GeoFlow and save the workbook. So what we'll do is simply click Play Tour, and you can see three scenes will be woven together with cinematic effects, which are simply, you know, you select the different effects, so whether it's Dolly or Pan in this case. So we can look at the entire neighborhood. We can zoom into that neighborhood that we were particularly interested in. The effect takes a little bit of time, but we'll zoom in next. And now we start seeing that seasonality that we had just talked about. And it shows up. I have to give it a second. And now you see we have annotations. And if we wanted to, we could actually just stop the tour and be able to interact with it. So that's why it's not just a video. A tour in GeoFlow is actually an interactive visualization that we can zoom around, get metadata on these different points. So that's just a little taste of GeoFlow. Glad it worked out. We'll throw it back to Visio, which I'm sure you are all interested in.
Thank you, Ari. Where were we? Bringing diagrams to life with data. So this is another BI situation that we want to express the data in a way that's visual. We've already got a product that works with shapes. Shapes can have properties. And what we can do is associate external data with the properties of shapes and represent them in different ways. So, Tailspin Toys, quite simplistic example, 5 servers. And what we're going to do is take some external data in the form of a SharePoint list. So the great thing about a SharePoint list is this is still a self-service BI story, that individuals can be empowered to create lists, to find lists, and to maintain the data inside the lists. And here there are 5 entries consisting of servers and a status. Currently, all servers are online. So back inside Visio, by selecting a shape here on the Data tab, we can bring up the Shape Data window. So all of these shapes have these properties, and they're customizable. And you'll notice here that the server has already been filled in. In fact, each of the 5 servers has been assigned its unique network name. Then on the Data tab, I click Link Data to Shapes. And I have the ability to integrate data from Excel, from SharePoint, SQL Server. Access is on the list. It's actually not supported. I'm not sure why it's there. SharePoint list is what I'll choose. Click Next, specify the site, and then within the site, choose the list, server list. And that adds a data set to the Visio diagram, and it shows me all the data down here. When I right-click inside this external data, I can specify which columns I want to be left visible. SharePoint adds all of these other additional columns to track the list items, but I'm only interested in the server name and the status. And then if I drag and drop onto a shape, you'll see this little link here is telling me that that row is linked to a shape. And in fact, if we look at the shape data for the selected, that's what I'm looking for. Okay, it's in this list here. Why can't I get to the bottom of it? There it is. It's gone and added an additional property, status. It wasn't there before, but by associating a row that has this column, we can now see how that property has been added and the value has been assigned. Now, I could have numerous shapes, and it would be very tedious to drag and drop each row. So fortunately, there is this command up here to automatically link. For all shapes on this diagram, where the server matches the server, Remember that each shape already has its unique name. Then you'll now see that all five rows have been associated with the shapes. So let me just close that window to make more shape. Close the property window. The next thing would be to express how those property values can be visualized. So let me lasso all of these and select them. And then here, create a new data graphic. And a data graphic is a collection of data items. I'll create the first one, which will use the server, and I want to express this and display it as text. Instead of using the default position, I center it, and I'll have it vertically positioned above the shape. There are numerous templates, so I'll choose what I think is the more attractive one, heading number 3, and I'll update its property to a font size of 16 point. Now, my collection now consists of a single item, and if I click OK and apply it, you'll now see how that text displays across each shape. I'm going to extend that data graphic by adding a second item, this time based on the status and using color by value. I mean, icon set works well here as well. It will overlay icons based on conditions. Here, I'll just go ahead and choose color by value. You can see the only value that it's aware of is online. Red's probably not the best color to use for online, so I'll choose green. And then I'll insert a second assignment, which will be for offline, and the color red. And now when I OK this, because of all the servers are online, they all come up as green. And that concludes this part of the demonstration, which is the creation of the diagram, the relationship to external data, and the representation of properties through the data graphics. That also concludes the client side of our presentation. From a client perspective, we've looked at Excel on the desktop, we've looked at Visio on the desktop. The next story comes to, how do we share all of our efforts? When my manager wants to see that sales per capita report, or needs to interact and create his or her own reports based off a data model, the sharing story comes through SharePoint. Over to Ari.
Yeah. I'll just give a short introduction here so we can get right into the SharePoint demos. But really, as Peter said, it's all about being able to share out content. The governance aspect is also present on SharePoint so that the administrators of the SharePoint sites can manage the different business intelligence assets that have been shared there. And that's really through Excel services, Visio services, so taking the content that Peter just created in Visio and Excel, being able to share those out. Also looking at performance point services that we've had for a few versions now, and extended with some SQL Server add-ins like Power Pivot and reporting services. So take a look at Excel services, first of all, is really the way to render Excel workbooks in the browser. Be able to get some of that interactivity that you saw with Power View, as well as other reports and pivot tables in the browser. Live connections are available within SharePoint, so being able to pull data from back-end sources like SQL are all available with SQL service, with Excel services. So just looking quickly at the architecture, so we're really focused on the Excel workbook so far in this presentation, but now being able to connect to different databases on SharePoint as well as render them in the browser with Excel Web Access and Excel Web Services. So that's really what we'll take a look at right now.
Right. It's a bad, 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 bad idea if you need to share your Excel workbook to attach it to an email and send it to someone. Okay, it could contain a PowerPivot data model, there could be connection strings, business logic, data that you don't intend people to get to. So the preferred approach is that we publish it, secure it in SharePoint, we then have the perfect single version of the truth. And then people can gain access to it via its URL. And the common approach is that via web access. So supported web browser for SharePoint, they can open up and browse and interact with the reports that are embedded inside the workbook. So in this demonstration, we'll take a look at building up a dashboard based off the content of my workbook. So the first step then is to go ahead and publish the workbook. By publishing, it really is a fancy word for save it in SharePoint. Although there are some extra steps that I like to follow, and that's preparing the workbook for publication, making it just right, determining what should be rendered by Excel services, and parameterization. The ability to have the user interact by passing values in to cells or through filters or slices. and you can control what Excel is allowed to retrieve from the outside world. So here in this workbook, what happened to our data mining demo? We'll come back to that. I just realized we're missing a data mining demo. I think in our confusion, we jumped over some slides. Let's not lose focus. So there are two items in this workbook that I want to embed into a dashboard. The first is this Power Pivot pivot table. I'm getting confused myself. This pivot table. So if I right-click and open up pivot table options, my preparation is to come up with a more friendly name than pivot table one. This one really here is profit monitoring. Let's just call it profit analysis. That's just a unique name for the pivot table, and you'll understand why I'm doing this in just a moment. For my second item, consisting of an Excel table and an app for Office, what I'm going to do is just select, not that, this range of data, and create a named range. In this case, it will be demo analysis for demographics. Next, because I don't want my dashboard to look like an Excel report, here on the View tab, I just turn off grid lines. So it looks less Excel-ish. And now that I'm ready to publish, here in the browser view options is where I can control what Excel services is allowed to render. By default, it's the entire workbook and visible resources. When I switch it to items in the worksheet, I then are selective about the named range and the pivot table that can be rendered by the server. Next, from a parameterization point of view, I can add in that year, that single cell named range that really represents the pivot table filter can also be parameterized, and you'll see why when I build up my dashboard. And now I go ahead and save as, browse across to my Power Pivot gallery, and we'll talk about the gallery in just a moment. And the Excel workbook is now saved there. Now, be aware that that Excel workbook consists of worksheets, a PowerView sheet, and also an embedded data model. The Power Pivot data model is also published and is part of the manifest of that Excel workbook. Switching across to SharePoint then, anyone that navigates to the gallery and has permission to do so will find that the sales analysis workbook is here. Right. Let's talk about Power Pivot next. So that's a demonstration on Excel services. More to come. I'm going to build up the dashboard. But before I can tell that story, in recognition that this workbook has a data model in it and that I have the Power Pivot add-in installed for SharePoint, there's additional capabilities and features that would interest a self-service BI user. First of all, the Power Pivot gallery that I've just deployed to is available with the Power Pivot add-in. It allows you to provide, with Silverlight, a preview capability of the contents of your workbooks. It also provides the ability for users to schedule data refresh. So to keep the data current in the data model, they can schedule, for example, every day at 2 o'clock in the morning, go ahead and refresh these data connections. And that way, they're assured that the data is kept current. So now with that background, we can see here that my document is stored in the Power Pivot gallery. If I now refresh, that should have been sufficient time, indeed it was, for the snapshot service to go ahead and take some thumbnail images. So users can now browse across and see the report of interest. Simply by clicking on the report, Excel services is engaged. And here it is, server-side rendering. We can see the app for Office here rendering itself independently. So while it's doing its thing, and there it is, I could switch across to the second item that I published, and that's the pivot table, and I have complete interactivity here to go ahead and interact and change time period, expand, collapse.
This is called the gallery view, for those of you who are interested.
And filter and sort is also supported here. So this is the first step. What else I could do here is by clicking on this icon on the right, this is where you can configure the data refresh. The other two icons to the left, the Excel icon, allows a user to open up a connection on their Excel client to the Power Pivot workbook and they can create new analytic experiences based on the data model that is now published to SharePoint. The second icon is PowerView. You could launch PowerView and create a PowerView experience in the web browser. All right, typically you would enable, configure the data refresh here. Now, to complete the Excel services demonstration, I switch across to my dashboards library, and I add in a new web part page. So what I love about this is I'm a web developer without even having to write a single line of code, and that's the brilliance of SharePoint, web part pages, and constructing functionality and capability through web parts. So this will be called my sales dashboard. I'll choose the template that gives me a header, left column ideal for filters, and the right is for the body. I can then introduce web parts into the different zones. So here from my business data, I'll introduce an Excel web access web part, and then I can configure it by clicking the link here, and in the right-hand side, I just navigate to the workbook. So located in my Power Pivot gallery, there's a workbook called Sales Analysis. And specifically, the item that I want to appear there is my profit analysis, that pivot table. Don't show me a title bar that's automatic. Turn off any functionality that would, by default, be there with a toolbar. And from an appearance point of view, just to make it look good, this becomes profit analysis. And by clicking OK, the web part is now configured, and you see that that pivot table appears in the dashboard. I'll add a second web part. Again, an Excel web part connecting to the same workbook and the second item that I published. And I think this one was demo analysis. Same configuration. Two parts. They could have come from different workbooks, from different data sources, and now they are side by side. So to complete this, I then add a third web part here on the left column. I have a folder here for filters, and I have a SQL Server Analysis Services filter type. So I can configure it by giving it a name. This will just be called year. And I have an Office Data Connection file already published by the IT department that allows me to connect to my sales analysis database. With that selected, I can then choose from the dimensions in that model and the available hierarchies. Under Advanced Options, I choose to set a default. So this is a little tricky because it uses the MDX on the date dimension on the year hierarchy. Default to the member with a key of 2010. That's not really self-service BI, but that's just the way you've got to do it if you want to default. And then finally, give it a better title, and I'll change the width to 120 pixels because I know that's a good width. The last step in assembling this dashboard then is to create connections that when a filter value is selected here, it should pass its values to my profit analysis part. And because I parameterized the workbook, you see here that it knows there's a parameter called year, and it passes it into year. And I repeat that for the second part. And then I can stop editing the page. Users can then navigate to this dashboard page, and I'll just make it easier to see. They can come in here and they can select a year, and you see it passes it into my table, which is really cube functions. That then refreshes the Office app, or app for Office, and they can choose then to interact with the pivot table. No code required. Create your reports in Excel based off your own data model, publish it, web parts, deliver it through web part pages. Visio services. It's all very well to create that diagram on the desktop, but believe it or not, it's a bad idea to attach that diagram to an email and send it to someone. The preferred approach is publish it, secure it, and then you can embed it again through using web part pages. Cool news is they don't need Visio installed. That's the same with Excel services. You don't need it installed necessarily. You just need a compliant web browser, that's Internet Explorer, Safari, Firefox, you need connectivity to SharePoint, you need permissions, and then you can start to interact with these resources. Let's see this in demonstration. So, Visio diagram has been created. The step then is to go ahead and publish it. Similar to Excel services, you can control what is published. A diagram can exist of different pages, and you can select which pages would be published. Here, I just go ahead and say Save As, browse to the SharePoint site, and I have a diagrams library. I update the type to be a Visio drawing. It must be a VSDX for Visio services to render it. And then I save. That diagram is now published in SharePoint. And there it is. But to provide an interactive dashboard, or rather a non-interactive dashboard that would reflect the current state of data and keep it refreshed, I'm going to add a new WebPart page. And this WebPart page will just be server status, and it will be a full page. And into this full page zone, I will add the Visio Web Access WebPart. And to configure it, wrong link, I just reference the document that was published. And the property I want to point out here is the zero here for the refresh interval says never refresh. The lowest value in minutes you can specify is one. Okay. And so here being rendered from the server is my diagram, and this is pretty cool. You can move it around, you can zoom right up if that makes sense to do so. And quality graphics. So what's going to happen now if I switch back to my server list and for whatever reason the web server's offline and I update that item in the SharePoint list? With a little bit of patience, within at least a minute, that's just going to update. Yeah, well, the server, every minute, it's just refreshing, and therefore, every time it refreshes a diagram, it requeries the underlying data, and then it will represent that through the diagram. It usually happens in less than a minute. And there is a bit of a wow factor when you see it the first time, so let's just do this. Are there any questions from anyone, maybe about Visio services? Nope. Okay, you've seen it. It works. That's what I wanted to show you. That was publishing a Visio diagram. That was working with the Visio Web Access web part. Brings us to the last of the BI services covered in this session. That's Performance Point Services, available in SharePoint Server. This is a performance management application that is allowing you to define rich performance management experiences through dashboards by defining key performance indicators, embedding them into scorecards, embedding them into dashboards, and providing reports for analysis. There are actually seven elements, beginning with the data source. That could be your PowerPivot data model. You can define key performance indicators that bring together actuals and targets. You saw me create one in one of the first demonstrations. You could leverage that and surface that through a KPI here in this product. To make it look good, you can define sets of indicators, and then ultimately KPIs get reported through scorecards in a dashboard. Scorecards can also use the data source to provide filtering and context, and this is the monitoring capabilities that answer questions like, how are we going? How is our profitability? Is it on track? And in particular, where the profitability is not on track, we have reports, and these deliver the analytics that allow you then to answer the questions like, why aren't we on track? Why is it that we're not meeting target? Then you can define filters and assemble dashboards from those filters and the scorecards and the reports. Let's see this in demo. True to the cooking show spirit, I already have a pre-created workspace. You can see here that I have a data connection that via the URL to the PowerPivot workbook that I published, this is the source that this workspace uses. I've already defined a KPI for profitability that leverages the profitability KPI that I created in the first demonstration. There's associated reports that let us analyze the KPI, and this is using an analytic chart. There's a filter for year, and then I've got the sales dashboard. What I don't have is a scorecard. This scorecard then, starting from a blank scorecard, will bring in the profitability KPI, and when I click update, you get to see the real values coming from the Power Pivot data model. Here on the target, I don't want to show anything except the status indicator, and I'll center that. And then next, for my dimensions, because we want to break this down by demographic, I can then say bring in all of the members from the demographic. Wrong one. And dynamically select them, because in the future there may be new demographics. And then we end up with a scorecard that now looks like this. And then finally, I make this underline, and I make this the color blue, which would tell my users that there's an action that can be performed. I provided a better name, and then I publish this. That's by saving it. That definition is now in SharePoint. Now I can come to my dashboard, and then I can build up a layout that has a scorecard here that places the report here on the right and puts the filter of year across the top. To create the connections, the filter gets passed into the scorecard. The filter also passes into the report. And finally, if they select a demographic on the scorecard, then the member for the row passes into the demographic of the report. I know that's a lot to take in a short demonstration, but essentially that's the process of wiring up the connections between filters, scorecards, and reports. So now I can go ahead and publish this dashboard. And in doing so, it creates a WebPart page or a series of WebPart pages in SharePoint. Automatically, it opens those up. We can then filter by a time period, see that novice is off track, select it, the context is passed into here, and then to analyze this in more detail, I'll open it up in a new window. So here I can do things like change the report type. This would look better as a pie chart, or maybe it would look better as a grid, in which case I could go ahead and add additional measures. Bring in the profitability measures that I created. Drill down through region, sort, filter, or perhaps use the decomposition tree to analyze graphically what was happening in Alaska across the months of that year. And within the months, you know, what was going on with the product item groups and so on. And this is how you discover the answers to your questions, why are we not on track? And that's the Performance Point Services story. Which pretty much brings us to our summary.
Yeah.
No data mining. Do you want to take this one? Well, the data mining, I've only got 2 minutes left. Do you want to see the data mining demo? It's about 1 minute. Yes. Okay. So there are two add-ins for Excel for data mining. And so the demo here says that what we need to do is forecast what the next 2 months' sales are likely to be. Now, I could use the good old gut instinct, but that's not terribly scientific and difficult to justify if ever asked why I came up with this forecast. So what I do here is that I make a connection to SQL Server because the DBA has done a favor for me and created a view that gives me historical sales data. So inside my Tailspin Toys database, I find that there's this view here that breaks down the sales by demographic. And this is just imported as a table in Excel. This is just standard Excel capability. But in this format, what you'll see is as a table, and because the data mining table analysis tools add-in, this is a free download. Download it for Excel 2007, 2010, 2013. This add-in will allow you to analyze the data inside an Excel table. And you'll see that there are some 7 different data mining functions. Interestingly enough, none of them use the word data mining because that's a little too scary for its target audience. They're just analytic tools. In order to use them, you must have a connection to analysis services. And that's a multi-dimensional and data mining instance of analysis services. And once you've established that connection, I can then come in here and forecast this table for my 5 different demographics. Give me the next 2 months. My timestamp is this column, and it's monthly data. What it's doing then is communicating with analysis services, taking that data up, mining, and bringing the results back, and expressing it as these 2 additional forecasts down here. So technically, these are 2011-01, 2011-month 2, and then you can see the forecasts here in a table. There's much to explore here. The second add-in that I don't demonstrate is what you see here with the data mining tab. It is a full range of data mining tools to prepare, cleanse, model, verify, validate, and visualize and query all within Excel. This is a very powerful tool. Again, you'll need connectivity to analysis services to work with it. That's the demo that we missed out on. So, to wrap up in summary, do you want to wrap up with a summary, Ari?
Sure. Yeah, so what you've seen is a number of capabilities that we've brought into the Office 2013 client, specifically Excel and Visio. We've then been able to share them within a browser with SharePoint 2013. And then really look at kind of what these solutions can leverage. So that's leveraging data preparation, data models, which are present throughout Excel workbooks, rich interactive data visualizations at a number of different touch points, whether that's in the client with GeoFlow and PowerView, or in the browser with some of the new apps for Office, some of our performance point capabilities, and then finally our data mining capabilities as an add-in for analysis services. So it's kind of a whirlwind tour of Office BI, but I think I want to thank Peter right here for doing a great job of just busting through everything. I hope you guys got a whole lot out of it. I know I did. So.
Yeah, so a couple of points there before we wrap up. Did I write any lines of code to achieve rich dashboards based off my own data model, based off rich transformation of data, rich interactive reporting? There really is a compelling and exciting story here how business users can, once empowered, granted permissions, and I'll grant that they need education, but as an IT group, you can start to offload back to the business and empower them to produce and manage their own solutions. The IT oversight, by the way, could be a concern for some people. How do we control what's going on here? And just to let you know, on Friday, there is a great topic exactly on that. How can you maintain self-service BI? And, whoops,
what happened? Do you have a
slide on that? Nope, but I was going to get to it. So I think the related content has... That way, there's our summary. Related content comes in. So I think what we've got is on Friday, I didn't include it. There are numerous other topics that we'll go through other in detail. In fact, they're labs.
Well,
this
labs
is the related
Peter
content.
Created himself, actually.
So we've got a topic tomorrow on big data analytics. I'll be doing that with Excel. So that's more detail on Power Pivot using a big data source. PowerView with multidimensional is new. It's well worth checking out now that PowerView can be based on cubes. Then on Thursday, there's a data mining topic. If that interests, this is really for .NET developers embedding data mining. I'm delivering that. Data Explorer, whole session dedicated to it. It was one of the top-ranked sessions, TechEd North America.
They combined some GeoFlow stuff in there too, actually.
And the Power Hour, if you're after a relief from the seriousness of all of these sessions, this is a session whereby you... We'll only learn something useful if it's an accident. We're showing you how the BI tools can be used in rather interesting ways. It's a humorous, more comedic session. So on Friday, and I didn't enlist it, there is a session that talks about how to govern self-service BI with Office and SharePoint. Standard resources apply. We would be very grateful that you would evaluate this session. It's really important to us to understand if we met your expectations, if we met your requirements. You're in the running for a great prize, I think. Is it an Xbox? Don't quote me on that. So please take the time to use this QR code to submit the evaluation. We'll take this opportunity then to thank you very much for your time and attendance, and we hope that you got something out of this session. Thank you.